It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Just ahead, for the first time in history, the American Medical Association has an African-American woman as its president. And she grew up in rural Appalachia.
Girls from communities of color can know that they can aspire not only to be physicians, but to be elected to the highest office of the physicians of this country.
We'll hear from West Virginia native Dr. Patrice Harris and her thoughts on how the AMA can help the region meet some tough health challenges. That story from the Ohio Valley Resource is just ahead. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A new report warns that coal-dependent communities are at risk of fiscal collapse if they do not find ways to replace lost tax revenue as the mining industry declines. The authors say policies to address climate change would accelerate the decline, but could also provide a new stream of revenue. Sydney Bowles has more.
The report found that policies to address climate change would increase the risk of fiscal collapse in counties that are significantly tied to coal. Unless, that is, those climate change policies included specific means to support coal-reliant communities and displaced miners. Adele Morris is a senior fellow and policy director at the Brookings Institution, and she's one of the report's co-authors. She says policies like taxing carbon emissions or regulating greenhouse gases would mean a rapid decline in coal production, and that would have far-reaching consequences.
You've got the workers who are dislocated. You have the loss of property tax and sales tax revenues. People are closing schools and limiting other government services. And then what happens is people move away.
But Morris says all of this is already happening, even without significant climate change prevention policies. In West Virginia, for example, Boone County saw total revenues drop by more than a third in just 5 years because of the decline in tax revenue from coal. So whether or not there are new climate change policies, Morris says, county governments need to plan for a transition or risk defaulting on loans and bond payments and potentially even bankruptcy. Morris says existing ideas to prioritize coal communities, like the Reclaim Act, might not be enough.
Those are kind of small potatoes compared with what's really necessary. We really need something in the billions of dollars per year invested in these communities.
The study shows that climate change policies, combined with major investments in coal communities, could help the region achieve an economic shift while preventing further damage to the climate. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Sydney Bowles.
A new report shows the life expectancy for white women in rural Appalachia is declining. WFPL's Liz Schlimmer has more.
The report from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation found that mortality is on the rise among white women in non-metropolitan areas in Kentucky, as well as in Appalachia and nearby states. Meanwhile, life expectancy is up for white men and women in cities and suburbs in the same areas. Samuel Preston is a demographer at the University of Pennsylvania and co-author of the report. He credits those differences in part to rates of lung cancer and respiratory diseases among rural women.
There's been much smaller improvements in reductions in the prevalence of smoking in non-metropolitan areas than there has been in metropolitan areas for women. For men, all areas are experiencing roughly the same rate of decline in smoking.
For decades, life expectancy in the United States was on a steady incline until very recently. According to a CDC report released this summer, overall U.S. life expectancy is down the third year in a row. I'm Liz Schlummer in Louisville.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:47. Mostly sunny skies today. There's a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms in the south this afternoon, with highs in the 80s. Partly cloudy overnight, chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 60s. Partly sunny tomorrow with a chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s and 90s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the Walls Foundation, fighting for employment for all and a green jobs agenda. More information at walswheeling.com. The American Medical Association marked a milestone last month. The largest professional association for physicians in the United States inaugurated its first African-American woman as its leader. Erin Payne recently spoke with the newly elected president, who has a unique understanding of West Virginia. And she says the organization will work for patients and physicians as they face some of the nation's toughest health challenges.
To these duties and obligations,
I pledge myself, so help me God.
I pledge myself, so help me God.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Dr. Patrice Harris took the oath in June to become the first African-American woman to serve as the American Medical Association's president. I recently spoke to her about the honor and what it means to her.
I know that I can stand as tangible evidence that young girls from communities of color and young boys and girls can know that they can aspire not only to be physicians, but to be elected to the highest office of the physicians of this country.
I understand you have a unique perspective and understanding of the health issues of our region.
Well, I was born and raised in Bluefield, West Virginia, and I attended West Virginia University for both my undergraduate degree and my medical school degree. My father worked on the railroad. My mother taught school, so I have a unique and personal connection and understanding of the region.
What are the most pressing issues specific to this region that you feel the AMA can help address?
In West Virginia, there's a significant burden for those who have diabetes, who have high blood pressure, those who have an opioid use disorder. So the AMA has strong policy. We've been advocating for increased funding. We've been advocating and working to ensure that those who have a substance use disorder are not stigmatized. We want to make sure we increase understanding that substance use disorder is a brain disorder. It's a chronic illness, just like diabetes and hypertension.
Dr. Harris brings an understanding of the opioid epidemic to the AMA's presidency, both as a long-practicing psychiatrist in Georgia and as chair of the organization's opioid task force since 2011. The task force recently released its 2019 progress report on the opioid epidemic, offering recommendations to remove barriers to treatment. Dr. Harris says the report also makes a point of highlighting effective approaches to addressing opioid addiction.
Absolutely, and I think it is important to talk about what's working. We highlight the numbers regarding the decrease number of opioid prescriptions that are written, around 28% nationwide over the last 4 to 5 years. There are programs around this country, across this country, that are working in this space. Hospitals are looking at stewardship programs to make sure that opioids are prescribed appropriately. And I do want to say, now, we do want to be judicious in our prescribing, but we also don't want to limit patients who have pain regarding access to treatment. Across this country, only 2 in 10 people who want opioid use disorder treatment have access to it.
And that's a key statistic to the Ohio Valley region, which faces some of the highest fatal overdose rates in the country. The AMA also advocates for better conditions for physicians. Dr. Harris's tenure as president will include advocating for less bureaucracy, better physician education, and better systems to offer health care.
Regulatory burdens, electronic health records are a significant cause of physician dissatisfaction and, unfortunately, burnout in the physician community. So the AMA is working on several fronts to address that issue, certainly to reduce the amount of paperwork and the regulatory burden. In fact, we did a study several years ago that showed that for every 1 hour physicians spend in caring for patients, we spend 2 hours in patient care. And so we're working on many fronts in that area. We also, of course, at the AMA, were strong supporters of the Affordable Care Act because we wanted to make sure that those who were uninsured or underinsured had access to health care. And certainly we know that in West Virginia, there's a significant number of folks, and in the region, in Kentucky and in Ohio, there are significant numbers who don't have access to health care.
The ACA increased the number of those insured in the Ohio Valley, but it is again being challenged in court over questions of its constitutionality. The case will likely head to the Supreme Court, which means Dr. Harris's tenure as the AMA's president is sure to be interesting. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Aaron Payne.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. An extended version of the interview with Dr. Harris is available at ohiovalleyresource.org. In Appalachia, many of us know well the symptoms of industry decline. Some are more apparent than others. This morning, we'll hear the beginning of a series that explores deindustrialization in the Northern Panhandle. Ella Jennings, a native from the region, produced a podcast series called What Happened to Weirton to fulfill a master's in journalism. Here's her introductory piece titled Living in the Aftermath.
I stood anxiously with a crowd of Weirton natives and former steelworkers on a hillside in Weirton, West Virginia, overlooking Weirton Steel's basic oxygen plant, or BOP. An implosion crew far down below had already sounded the one-minute warning with an air horn. I held out my microphone in anticipation, not sure what to expect. And then... My dad was there with me. He had worked in the BOP for a year in 1990, and then all over the mill as a firefighter from 1994 to 2004. He was interviewed by a reporter for WTOV9, a local news outlet, and I think his voice captured the mood as we watched a piece of our history collapse into a cloud of dust.
It's sad. It is sad. I mean, so many good guys worked down there. So many families grew out of that mill. It's sad. And then really good men and women worked in there. It's sad for me.
As the crowd slowly walked away, a man asked me what I was recording the implosion for. After I explained, he commented that, "You noticed no one was clapping." I was somewhat of an emotional wreck the rest of the day. I even cried a few times. But a year ago, I probably wouldn't have given it a second thought. It wasn't until after I started this project that I found myself caring about the town. Growing up, I hated Weirton. It was a place where people always reminisced about the past because there wasn't much to look forward to in the present. After my parents divorced, I moved to Weirton with my mom and lived there from 2005 until I graduated from Weir High School in 2014. It wasn't an exciting place to be a kid. There are a lot of cafes around town, but not the kind for coffee. They're gambling joints with video lottery machines. Even the old Dairy Queen had been turned into a video lottery hotspot, which spurred two middle school girls to start a petition to bring back places for kids to go in the city. The most popular place for high schoolers to hang out was the Sheets parking lot. When the time came to go to college, I couldn't have been more happy. I arrived at West Virginia University ready to forget everything before my freshman year of college. And for a long time, I did do just that. I enrolled in journalism classes and found myself happily removed from anything to do with the Ohio Valley. But as I matured, I realized there was a story behind why my childhood home faces so many struggles. The term deindustrialization became an obsession of mine as I studied the structural issues that led to Weirton's blighted state. We are not alone in our struggles. Hundreds of small towns and cities across the U.S. and the world have faced the consequences that come along with a steady decline of manufacturing employment. Businesses close, populations decline, the middle class shrinks, and people are left wondering what happened to their once prosperous community. And it's these people I wanted to know more about. How do people cope when the economy advances and they're left behind in the rubble?
That was Ella Jennings reporting from her hometown, Weirton, West Virginia. We'll hear more from Ella next week as she explores what happened to Weirton. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.